What's going on, GSC fam? Welcome to another episode of The Winner's Circle, a podcast where we dive deep into the mindset of professional soccer players, or in this case, a former professional soccer player. Today's special guest is Naeem Bashir, has experience playing in Europe and basically all over. Naeem, my man, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm chilling. I'm happy to be here. I think, what am I, number 48? Something like that or whatever, because I'll be watching. I've been waiting to get on.
Yeah, man. Nah, you're definitely you're starting off the third season, the third series of this. We have a nice lineup for this upcoming 2022 year. So I just wanted to get the right people going, man. And you're in that list for sure. How's the holiday been treating you, man?
It was good. Just got back from South Carolina, Georgia. Shout out to all the South Carolina clientele down there, Tyler B, Ethan, PC, all of those kids. You've been there with me as well. It's a great group of kids down there. And the weather is great, you know, especially for somebody who lives up here in Maryland/DC. Oh, dear God, I didn't want to come back to this weather, but it was great. It was nice.
Yeah, man, South Carolina, that experience was fun, man. Meeting all those guys, great group of kids, man. But yeah, Naeem, basically what I love to do to start off the podcast, since it is called The Winner's Circle, I always ask everybody right off the bat, what is your definition of being a winner?
Definition of being a winner. Somebody who's always in it, regardless of the result.
Okay.
You're there, you're competing. One of the things that my parents adopted in all of us early on was we don't use negative terminologies like can't and quit. Right? Those two things, right? So there was no such thing as I can't. It was always, you just haven't figured it out yet. And it was never a I quit, which is like final. It's like, I'm not doing this anymore. It was always required upon all of us to finish and complete everything that we set out to do. So regardless of the result, whether you chose to do it again or whether you wanted to do it again, if you signed up for something, if you decided to do something, the objective was to do it, make sure that you do it at a high level, especially if you're going to be there, right? And then from there, if you decide not to do it again, cool. But make sure that you finish and you complete that particular task that you started. So as far as I'm concerned, a winner is somebody who is always in it.
I love that, man. I can definitely see how much that helped you throughout you being now a trainer, but I can only imagine how much it helped you out being a footballer. Obviously when you're growing up, you don't really realize what your parents are kind of teaching you. When would you say that you kind of encountered that first moment in your life that you kind of like thought to yourself, I remember my mom or my dad telling me this of like, don't ever say I can't, or don't quit, or just finish what you've started. At what age do you feel like you encountered that situation?
Seven years old. My father walked into my bedroom and he asked me, do you want to go to Egypt with your grandfather? I thought that this was more so kind of like vacation. At that particular time, I took a big interest in geography, history. I'd sit in front of the TV and watch Discovery Channel, the History Channel, more than I would probably cartoons. So obviously I'm acquainted with history. I love history. I love historical items and facts and just stories. I love stories. And, when he asked me, I was like, yeah, sure. Now, what I didn't know at that time was that my grandfather had a boarding school for American kids, basically for American kids to come from here in the States and go over there to Egypt. He had this big like villa. Like it was like 3 or 4 stories, and it was just a giant, like it was just a giant square or a giant cube. Like it was made straight from bricks in this really big open lot. And I didn't know that, you know, essentially I would be moving there, you know, that I would be going to school there. And I try to tell people when they ask, like, what, you know, how does that work or whatever? It's just like, think Harry Potter. Like you go there for the school year, then you come back for the summer, and then you go again for the school year, you come back for the summer. But I did that at 7. When I didn't have a very profound relationship with my grandfather. My grandfather was a very, not a very stoic individual, but he demanded respect, right? He was well known in many different circles, in many different states, for many different things, and he commanded respect. And we all do that within the family. So he was kind of an intimidating individual, you know, at first glance, what have you. So it wasn't like you could really get in to get to know him. I didn't really know my cousins who were there with him at the time, like that. I was very, like a very to myself kid. You know, I would go sit in a corner by myself and just read a book or read three in a matter of 4 or 5 hours. You know, I wasn't very social or things like that. So you can imagine what that was like, you know, being 7 years old, hopping on the plane for the very first time that you can remember, and it being across the ocean, not just like down the street. Like I was the kid who, unfortunately, I was the kid who I would go to like sleepovers, like we're friends. And I would be the one to like call at like 10 o'clock and be like, can y'all come pick me up? Cause like, I don't want to be here no more. Like, I was that kid, right? So it was tough. Like I remember the first 7, 8 nights or so, like I cried myself to sleep every night just out of pure exhaustion. This was during the time where you had calling cards as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now I was just gonna ask, so in those moments when you're crying yourself to sleep, could you remember what you were thinking about? I mean, yeah, off the top of my head, you're probably thinking like you want to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
To what you're comfortable with.
You want to go back home. You want to, you're trying to understand why you're there. You're trying to understand your parents' thought process. You're trying to understand, like you're questioning whether or not you did something wrong as to why you're here. The people who are there don't know you, so they don't know how to comfort you. And also you don't feel comfortable going to them for comfort. So there's a lot of different things that's going on in your brain that essentially a 7-year-old should never have to go through by themselves mentally. And a lot of it is more so just pain for the most part. It's just, it's pain, and it's just thoughts. You can't focus on everything. Other kids are older, you know, you're one of the younger kids. Other kids are older, and they are just like, all right, whatever. Like they're treating it like it's a vacation, basically. Whereas you're like, yo, this is like my life, like has changed, right? And even like after the first conversation, and again, it's like calling cards. So it's like you know, your parents call on a particular day at a particular time, and you got to make sure that you're by the phone and you don't miss that call. You know, and then ultimately as well, you're looking
forward to all day.
You're looking forward to it, not just all day, but all week.
Yeah.
At 7, right? When you get to like 12 or 13, like you don't really care. Like you're like, all right, whatever.
Nah, man.
But at 7
years old, you're young, man. You're still
right.
You're the kid. You're still a kid, kid.
Mm-hmm. You're a kid. Yeah. So you're like, crazy. Yo, where are my parents? Like, where are my siblings? Like, where's comfort? Where's home? And yeah, just through that entire process, it was a matter of, like I said, just remembering the things that they said, you know, that with hardship comes ease, that, you know, God would never put you in a position that you weren't capable of dealing with. And that's a really big task to ask from a 7-year-old to try to remember and then implement. Because even at seven, you don't really have a real understanding of God yet, you know? So you got to find, like, you really, really got to dig deep for that, which is one of the things that I had to do. And that was probably my first, I'm not going to quit on this and I'm going to survive moment, because that's what it was. You know, for the sake of the interview, I'm not going to go into too many details of all the other things that I experienced during that, you know, portion of period of time, but it was survival. And it was rough. It's not like, you know, what people see where they go and they're like, oh, you got to see the pyramids and all that. Like, it was rough. Like, especially during that time, early 2000s, it was rough. So, but that was my first, that pretty much set the tone for the rest of my life in terms of not quitting.
I mean, I can only imagine, you know, first of all, you going all the way to Egypt at 7 years old and into a totally different life, new life, new country. And you're so used to, you know, being raised here in the States. It's completely different, mm-hmm. right? You know, obviously within your family, you have a certain culture regardless of where you grow up. For example, me, we still maintain the Peruvian and the Salvadorian culture at home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, outside of home, I grew up in D.C., Maryland. So, you know, I'm around all these different people. But right. Now if you take yourself and you go somewhere else, you know, it's just like that culture 24/7. Yep. And how do you do, like, different customs, different things? So I can only imagine, man. So yep. after that experience, when you kind of had to force yourself to learn and implement what you've been learning your whole life, how did you kind of cement it in a way into your thinking? Do you feel like other experiences on top of other experiences happened during that time, and then you're just like, this is my way of thinking, this is how it has to be? Or
for that time period, that's how it had to be. I had to be a certain way. Like I said, it was survival. So you're talking about an American kid, one, two, somebody who doesn't speak the language, three, I'm of color, right? And so you have to deal with racism at seven, trying to understand that. You have to deal with getting jumped every other day by a bunch of kids who just don't like how you look or like how you sound. You got to deal with people accusing you of different things and being able to get away with it simply because you're not from there. You got to deal with the culture, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, and it's not something that I blame, you know, them for, whatever. It's just, that's how it goes. You're in their country. You got to do things their way. It's totally different. So for me, I had to adopt a certain mentality, which again was, it's a dog eat dog mentality. You know, if you look at the story of the Jungle Book, you know, for instance, or even Tarzan, yeah. how they had to submerge themselves within the culture, you know, either you become the alpha or the alpha eats you, you know? And so you got to find your way within this particular climate. And your thought process obviously changes. It definitely changes. I'll never forget that when I, you know, would come back home, you know, the communication, you know, the way that people saw me was completely different, because I had a different energy about myself. I had a different sense of responsibility. Like, I was way more mature in various ways that a 7, 8, 9, 10 year old shouldn't have been, you know, at times. So you can imagine, I mean, people have been calling me an old soul since I was like a baby, but you can imagine what that was like in those 4 to 5 years where I stayed in Egypt, you know, of how, when I finally came out on the opposite end at 12 or 13 or whatever, like, I had all kinds of experiences like that would lead me through life at that point, you know? So it was just you had to adopt a particular mindset in order to get through it. And so it forces you to have to adjust. It forces you to have to get out of your comfort zone, which is one of the reasons why I say probably my best quality is my adaptability. I don't care where I go, where you put me, what I don't have or what I do have, I have the capacity to adapt to any demographic, to any culture, to any ethnic background, to any food, whatever it is. You can drop me off in Antarctica and I'll find a way to get out of Antarctica simply because this is how my life has been. I've constantly been dropped in the middle of situations or in the middle of different things, and I've had to come out on the opposite end just from that, you know, that decision on the eighth or ninth day being there of saying, I'm not going to let this beat me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I know that's such an important quality to have, because just being able to adapt to any environment that you put in can work for you in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, for example, if you are a footballer going on trial to a completely new country, mm-hmm. what's the number one thing that you always hear? Like, maybe on the pitch, they're doing their thing. Outside their mm-hmm. pitch, outside the pitch is like, I can't take this no more. Take me back home.
Right.
Right. So just right. being able to adapt to your environment is super important. Now, what were some ways that you know, let's fast forward a little bit when you're a little older and now you kind of comprehend these things. What are some ways that you adapted to these environments within your own mind? Like, how did you talk yourself or walk yourself through these things?
Well, it was, I mean, for one, it everything was easier after you deal with a situation of that magnitude at 70 years old.
Of course.
So as far as I was concerned, where other people were trying to adapt to certain things, I was like, bro, that's it. Like, that's all we got to do. Like, you telling me I ain't got to go to a whole nother country, or I ain't got to this or that or whatever. I'm like, that's easy. And if I do got to go to a whole nother country, like, we didn't have the best beds in Egypt. You know, I grew up on a farm, you know, raising chickens and goats and lamb and sheep and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, where the electricity was shut off in the entire, you know, hemisphere, basically. And like, you got no electricity for like 3 or 4 days, you know, or the water was shut off and you got to go down to the river or something or whatever and grab water out of a bucket or something, you know, or out of a well. You know, so different things like that. Like, I'm like, this is easy for me. So even like the first couple of times where I had to go overseas and, you know, we were sleeping on cots or, you know, we weren't in the best neighborhood or whatever, I was comfortable because I'm just like, I know what to do immediately. Whereas you could see a lot of the other guys would be like, yo, I didn't know this was going to be like this. Or, you know, especially like people who come from like Cali, Miami, New York, you know, like big city areas, everything nice. They live in lavish or whatever. And then they got to come to places like Iceland, you know, and they're like, bro, what is this?
Completely like, different, man. Completely different.
Right. They're like, what is this? And I'm like, bro, this is culture. You know, this is what happens. So yeah, everything is just easy after that. I mean, it doesn't take me much time to really adjust at all. I understand culture.
Yeah.
I understand, you know, when you're in a country, the number one rule is to follow the rules of the country. Don't sit here and try to, you know, do anything new. Don't sit here and try to, well, this is how we, no. That's not how that works. If you're in that country, you respect those rules, you respect that country, and the country will respect you. You know, the situation will respect you.
Different beliefs, different everything, man.
Yep.
I completely agree. Did you start playing soccer in Egypt?
So you know how this is. This is what I love about culture as well. The kids who are always the worst, where do they start off playing? We're like, any country, kids, the worst kids and worst people who can play, they always put them in what position first?
You're always in defense.
You want the defense, or you're playing as a goalkeeper? They like, don't you step up out of that goal. Stay in front of the goal. Don't move. Or you play defense. They like, don't you don't kick you just ball. Kick the ball up.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's it. So it wasn't like I actually learned. It was one of those things where in the neighborhood, they would play at a certain time, or it'd be like neighborhood versus neighborhood, city versus city.
They'd be like, Naeem, we need a keeper.
Exactly. They'd be like, because everybody else wanted to play on the field. So they were like, we need a keeper, right? And especially like coming from my background where like I grew up playing American football. I grew up playing baseball. I grew up playing basketball. You know, use my hands was easy. You know, it's all about using your hands, catching, et cetera, moving into space. So like everybody thought I was the best keeper just because they thought that I could play keeper, but it was just like I was athletic and I had good reflexes. So that's all it was. So I could never really get onto the field because it was like nah. So I didn't develop foot skills like that or whatever. Like, and if it was a matter of me like playing defense, like I would just run and, you know, kick the ball out or whatever, and they would cheer about that. But it wasn't like I was like
doing quirks or L turns. Scored on, that's what mattered, man.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. So it was like, you know your place. That's it. That's all we need you for. You know, but it was, yeah, especially for like those city versus city games. Nah, you playing in the goal. Like neighborhood versus neighborhood, that's something a little different, you know. But city versus city, they're like, nah. You staying over there in the goal, you know. And it would always be crazy because they would just block off a street or like this little garden area, and it'd be like the goal would be between these two trees. And it'd be crazy, but that's essentially where I first, I don't want to say learn how to play soccer. That was the first time that I experienced football.
Okay.
Right.
Hell yeah.
So man. Like the local club games, Ahli versus Zamalek, that was always crazy. It would shut down the whole city. People being, you know, the tea shops and everything on this tiny behind TV, you know, kids are hanging, you know, on the dressers or whatever, trying to looking
over the top.
Yeah, you know, people would be packed in their houses. You know, if somebody wasn't able to see the game because there was no space in their house, you know, they would yell outside and people would call from the window like, yeah, we got space, like, come on up. So you would just jump into a random family's, you know, house or whatever, apartment or whatever, and just be watching the game. But that's what, you know, they did. So
you know what's crazy to me now that you tell me, you know, all that experience and how it is that kind of culture that you were exposed to subconsciously, mm-hmm. you know, whether you realized it or not in that moment, it was so normal to you, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, everybody's just so excited to watch this one match. Like,
yep.
The city shuts down. You don't hear about that anywhere here in the States, right? So that's the number one thing with culture. Culture is the number one thing I think that is the biggest difference here, right? Now, when you got older and you started actually pursuing this as a career, right? At what age was that approximately for you?
15.
Okay, so 15, you made the decision. You're like, I'm going to actually train because I want to play football.
Mm-hmm.
Subconsciously, I like to think that since you were exposed to this at a young age, this is kind of like the image that you had in your head. Like, I want to be that guy on TV that everybody stops working for to watch.
Yep.
Right.
It was two games. First game, this is one of the reasons why I'm an Arsenal fan till this day. First game, or it was Arsenal versus Real Madrid in the semifinals Champions League 2006, when Henry does the solo run between the whole team and he scores a solo goal. That was the first game. The second game was when I had finally got back that summer and I watched the 2006 World Cup. And that was when I was like, I want to do that. Like, I went to my father and I was like, I can do that. I want to do that. So he was like, all right, cool. So he went to the newspaper and he was like, you know, let's find you a team, you know. And that's how it essentially started. But it was those two games. I'll say three. I'll say the Champions League final.
that year where Arsenal got cheated out by Barcelona. Yeah, I'm still salty about it.
You know, and then the fact that your dad was just like, all right, yeah, let's do it. Let's find you a team right off the bat. I think that helps so much. Like, maybe we don't realize it in the moment, but when we have people around us that kind of like, oh, you want to go do that? Okay, let's do it. Let's take that first step and let's do it. Right. Because I feel like sometimes the first step, taking that first step to do whatever it is that you want to do is probably one of the hardest things to do it, especially if you don't have somebody around you or someone that you know that can help you through it and push you through it, right?
Right. Now, keep in mind as well, my father, with the exception of like back in college, was essentially in like the 70s, 60s, 70s or something like that. That was the only experience that he had playing soccer, right? But it wasn't like he was really proficient. Like, my father was a really, really good basketball player. Till his day in his 60s, he still can put in some work on a basketball court. And he had originally like coached my brother on his AAU team. And he thought that I was going to play baseball or basketball because I was actually really good at both sports. He also wanted me to go into track and field as well. So he always, he gets upset with me, you know, teases me till this day because he was like, you were supposed to be Steph Curry. And I'm like, because I got like, even at 7 years old, I could shoot the ball from half court, like easily. Like that was one thing that I could do. I could shoot my lights out. But even then, like I said, he didn't have much experience with soccer. He didn't understand the climate of US soccer or soccer in general, whatever. It was just a matter of, he was like, if this is what you want to do, cool. But same thing that I said earlier, he was like, if you're going to do it, make sure you do it at a high level. You know, make sure that you compete, make sure that, you know, you put in everything to where you're, you know, satisfied with what happens or what doesn't happen. Regardless, you're in it, which is the thing that we went back to about, or the first question that you asked is, you know, what's the definition of a winner to you? So he, as long as that was implemented, he was like, cool, let's go for it. Let's find you something. Let's see if what we can work with.
Yeah, man. Because I think, you know, when you start something and you kind of half-ass it, it's not, it doesn't fulfill you. It's not fulfilling. Right. But when you actually put in the work and you see the fruits of your labor coming to float, you're kind of like, all right, maybe if I put in a little more work, maybe if I put in a little more effort, maybe I invest a little more time. And it doesn't necessarily just have to be, it doesn't just work with soccer or football. It works with anything that you do. You just invest a little bit more time into whatever it is that you're doing, and you're going to see results. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next week, maybe not next month, but 3 months down the road, it's going to happen. Absolutely. And then now we live in an age, in an era where we could literally get any information at the tip of our fingertips.
That's so nice, right?
Right? So now, like, it's crazy because you can literally search up anything, and those 3 months now can turn into 1 month.
Right.
Like, you can get everything quicker if you do it the right way, which is insane. But I want to say, like, around, you know, that age as well, 13, 14, 15 for me is when I kind of started realizing how the internet works and how it really has all the answers to whatever it is that you're looking for, right? And once you get started with something you don't know the answer to, the answer's right there. You don't know the answer to this, the answer's over here. You know, it's crazy, right? So now, when you started with this team, what was your first thought, man? How did you kind of like, now, like, after seeing Didi Henry in the Champions League final, you're like, I want to be that guy. And how did you move forward from that moment on?
So for one, I obviously didn't have the skills, right? Two things that I had was speed and just competitiveness, right? It was like, I'm not going to be outworked, you know, I'm not going to be out, I'm not going to be outplayed, I'm not going to be
I'm going to compete, right? So I started off playing as, I want to say, like a left back slash right back, or left wing back slash right wing back, simply because I was just fast. And the coach was like,
you were the guy that they told me just play him into space.
Yeah, yeah, I was that guy.
He's going to get it. Play him into space.
They were like, just hit it and he'll get it. Like, I've learned to like it. It's probably, like, people don't even understand how fast I can run. Like, I can run like a 4.4 flat or 4.3 flat. Especially like at that time, 16, 17 or whatever. I was just ridiculously fast. So I could, like, if you started sprinting before I did and you had 15 yards of me, I would catch you by the time you got to the box, you know? So I was that ridiculously fast, annoying player. Had no technique, no finesse, no nothing. It was just raw speed and just aggression. That was it. So eventually I started to understand that I could pass, right? Not that I could pass. Like, I didn't have the technical foundations that a lot of these kids have nowadays, to where they can pass with the outside foot or pass, you know, with a ping or this or that or whatever. It was more so like, I knew where a pass was. I had the vision and I struggled 50-50 with execution. Right. So sometimes I would play an immaculate ball. Like, I knew where the ball was supposed to go because I had the presence of mind, played multiple sports. So I knew what the right idea was. I just didn't have the right technique to be able to implement it. So I was kind of restricted, you know, restricted in my play for a decent period of time until I developed those skills. But it was like,
did you feel you were restricted in those moments? Like, did you know that you were kind of like,
yeah, absolutely,
lacking certain qualities?
Absolutely. I've always been honest with myself. Like, first and foremost, like, I knew that some people I was better than in aspects, right? But for me, I knew it was going to be uphill battle because I had never really played, you know? So it was a matter of like, okay, I'm really competing in an organized fashion. These kids have been playing longer than I have in an organized fashion. And so I have to catch them. So it was always a matter of, I would identify who the best players were on the team and I would aspire to pass them. You know, I would aspire to be better than them in certain technical areas or varieties or whatever the case may be, you know? And it was an uphill battle. I knew that and I understood that, especially when I switched from that first team that I joined to the next team I joined, who happened to be like state champions at the time, you know, with that being Free State, which is now Maryland United. But they were like coming off of winning the state cup. And I'm like, okay, crap. You know, you got all these kids. This is when ODP was actually legible or credible or what have you. And you had ballers. If anybody was ODP, they were definitely going to Division I colleges. Like, basically, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, you know, seeing some of these kids and being like, holy crap, like, I really got to put in some work. You know, like, these kids are really better than me. Like, the other kids, like, it was like, you know, okay, like, sure, I got to catch up, but, you know, I'm not too far behind. You know, I know if I put in some extra work, like, I could definitely catch up in a certain amount of time. Those kids were already like, we were around the same age, but they were like 3 to 4 years ahead of me. So at that point, what I did was I calculated the time that they had put in, the time that I had put in. And I did the math of like how many hours I would need to put in to catch up to them. Right.
So you did, so like, that let's say, all at what age?
That was like 16.
So you just one day you went home and were like, these guys are like much better than me. Yeah. And then you kind of calculated everything.
Yeah.
That's great.
So actually it was at 14 when I first joined. So it wasn't 15, it was 14. Because I played 2 years and then like the following half year or whatever, it was when I went to college, because I only played organized travel soccer for like 2.5 years or something like that. So, but yeah, I calculated. I literally wrote it down and was like, okay, if they train 3 times a week, 1.5 hours for XYZ amount of weeks, you know, this is the season. This is how many years that they've been doing that. This is how many years that they put in. This is how many hours they put in. Here's how many hours I have, right? So I had to get an estimate of the meeting point. And I was like, I need to catch up, yeah, obviously. So how many hours do I need to put in to catch up to this time? And essentially, when will that time meet? Because they're still obviously going to be working. But as they get older, they're not going to be working as many hours or what have you as I am. So eventually that led to me basically training for like 7 hours a day. Ridiculously stupid, but it was what I felt like I needed, you know, like obviously I know better now. I know how to manage better, rest better, eat better. But when you're like 16 or whatever, you're like, nah, I'm going out here.
You all in or nothing.
I'm going out here, you know? So yeah, I was training at like seven hours a day, playing pickup as well, right? Yeah. So it would always be like 2 hours worth of pickup. And that pickup culture is essentially where I honed a lot of my skills. Like I was playing at 3 or 4 different pickup spots, older guys, played with some Africans, played with some, you know, Caribbean guys. The West Africans and the East Africans play different, but play equally as dirty. You know, the Peruvians, just as dirty as the Bolivians, and the Bolivians are just as bad as the Hondurans. So it's like you get an understanding of different cultures. And then ultimately as well, I was always the youngest on the field. So there would always be like one of the older guys who like, and we all know that one guy, we all call him Theo. You just see him on the field. He got the silkiest touch. As long as you put it just straight to his foot, he got you. Right, he not gonna do too much, he not gonna do too little, he gonna do his job. You give him the ball, he gonna show you up. Real simple. Yeah,
that's right? How it is, man.
You make the run, he plays your ball. You know, if he wants the ball back, you got to give it to him right when he calls it, because by then, you know, he like, hey, he get yeah, ready to give you a slap.
And if you give him a pass and he loses it, it's your fault.
Exactly. It's got to stick to his foot. So you know how it is, right? So that's where I learned, you know. Now imagine you had 4 or 5 of those type of guys during the course of the week. Those were your personal trainers. Those are the people teaching you the game. Those are the people saying you need to do this more. Okay, you're good. I see you got talent, but I played you this ball here. You didn't make the run. You got to be looking mm-hmm. for it. So now this is where you learn how to get your head on the swivel, because you see Teo, now you like, where do I make the run? You know, yeah. Okay, he's going to play the ball here. Especially like if he knows that you're fast, Theo's going to be like, as soon as he get that touch, boom, ball is gone. Better especially if Theo got the outside foot pass, the little outside foot flick over yep. the top. You better be running. You better be running. So that's where I honed a lot of my skills. That's where I learned a lot. That's where I got to play against a lot of people that I still play with or against, or you know, nowadays, you know, even different professionals or whatever. Nowadays, that's where I learned, you know, and it had the same climate or culture that I felt when I was back in Egypt, same exact way.
And that pickup culture is so, so important. I think personally, I've learned a lot through pickup culture as well. Right. And it was crazy because I want to say when I was around 14 years old, I went to El Salvador for the first time, my dad's side of the family. And, you know, in the neighborhood, they would play with a plastic ball, 25 cents at the store. And it was my first time ever playing with a plastic ball, right? Mm-hmm. But these guys were just like, you know, the kids in the neighborhood were playing with it, balling with it. And I'm just like, how am I supposed to control this, right?
Right.
First couple of days there, I couldn't deal with it. Like, I just, I don't know. I couldn't, I didn't know how to play with it. Mm-hmm. And then you know, it just became normal. Like, this is the plastic ball. This is what we play with. This is who, you know. So we'd go to the park. We'd play pickup in the street, like, you know, with the little goals and everything. And eventually got to the point where, you know, a week in, I'm playing. I'm dribbling down the line. I'm about to get tackled, but whatever. I'm going in, right? And it was just, it was crazy to me that now when I look back at it, it's kind of like, you know, you learn how to adapt in that environment right away. Either you sink or swim. Yep. Like you said, it's a doggy dog world there. And it was crazy because I want to say towards the end, because I was there for about 2 weeks. Towards the end, we had like a tournament with the neighborhood, right? Like in the neighborhood, there was like this mini like futsal court with like little bleachers and everything. Like the ones you see in the movies, man.
Yep.
And I was the American kid. So everybody would just, you know, the American kid this, American kid that. But it was a lot of fun. Pickup culture was crazy. And then, you know, you come to the States and it's not like that. There is people that come from those cultures and try to bring it here and they all get together and play pickup. Those are the ones that you want to be around, you know?
Yeah.
Essentially, maybe the talent level or the competition level may not be the highest, but it's kind of, they just play to play. It's fun.
Yeah. There's a group, freeing, exactly. Like I was getting ready to say, it's therapeutic.
Yep.
Like there was a period of time where I was going and I was playing pickup and people were just like, it didn't have that feel. Like it was like everybody was playing fast and it was rushed and it was like, but it didn't have that feel, you know? And then I went to University of Maryland, you know, at the engineering fields at the front of campus. And it was like during the summertime. And like, I just remember being like super upset, super angry during that period of time or around that time this past summer. Both you and I know the circumstances behind it. But I was like just in a really rough play. I wasn't enjoying playing like I used to, you know, and I just wanted to enjoy it. And I remember going out and just playing with these, you know, my homeboy was like, yeah, we play out here like every day, you know. And he was like, come through. He was like, you know, the level ain't gonna be like all that great, but like, you know, we just come out and play. And it'd be like, you know, 11 on 11, 12 on 12, 13 on 13 or whatever.
In a small field, though, huh?
Small field, right? And it'd be like, it was the most fun I had playing in such a long time, you know, because you have those old, you know, and it was the majority of the group was Hispanic, but then you had a couple of African dudes who came as well. And then some randoms who would come, but it was just like, it was so unorthodox, but it was like, it was what you grew up with at pickup. And you know how pickup is, especially playing with that group. It's like, people are like chipping the ball and you're like, why are you chipping it? Cause like, especially once you play at like a decently high level, right? Professional level, it's like, keep everything on the ground. Right. But then you got people who are doing like these little flicks and, you know, just a little toe poke or whatever through or a meg or whatever. And you start to like, remember the beauty of just playing free, you know, with no consequence where, and even if you lost the ball, you just grab it again. And then we do it again. Like it was so freeing, like to just be out there throughout the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. So now Naeem, moving forward, so let's fast forward to where you're putting in these hours, you're getting better by the day, by the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've been doing this for how many years now? And then you finally get the opportunity to get on to go somewhere to actually test your skills in a professional environment.
So
when did that happen and how did that happen?
So at 17, I went to Mount Aloysius College, which was in like Crescent, Pennsylvania, Division III. And the only reason why I went there was because technically I still have one more year of high school, but I didn't want to do high school because my aspirations were to play professionally. And so my thought process was, okay, if I got to be stuck in college because that was the only route that was known at the time,
you go through college, you get drafted, play in MLS, and then whatever. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. If that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do. So I was like, if I finish college, you know, by 2021, then I still got more of a career, you know, then, you know, I still got time to play. I decided to test out early so I could jump into college early. So I went, played there. As soon as I came back, I went and trialed with DC United. Only reason why I didn't make that team was because of fitness at the time, but I had already been off of a collegiate season for like three months or something like that, whatever. Like the season ended like November, and then I went and trialed with them like end of January. So I was just out of shape. Technically, I was like, okay, I can compete with everybody, but I was just super out of shape that they were just like, nah. I went to a couple of combines after that, PSC. I would not suggest anybody go to the PSC combine. You can tell Simon I said that too. But I went to a couple of those just to test to see what my level was like, because I didn't have an identification of like the professional level. I didn't know what that was like. So I was like, I need to figure out where I am. So I went to a couple of these combines because I knew that there was going to be people who are older than me. I was probably going to be the youngest. You know, I would need a parent to sign underneath my name because I was that young or whatever. And I was like, you know, let me test my skills. And I went to maybe like three or four of them recurring. And each time something different would happen. I think like the first one went fine. Two of them, I had injuries like for both of them. Like it was like the weirdest thing. I would either get them there or get them like the week before. And I was like, what the hell? Like, so eventually I got onto one of their tours, went over to Sweden and Finland for one of their tours, the Scandinavian tour. And as much as I don't like PSC, it was probably one of the better experiences that I had, right? Because the very first professional game that we played was against Juventus IFK, and they were like Division 4 or something like that, professional team. And they smacked us up like 10-0. Like that was my first like encounter of playing in a professional environment and being able to see the stuff that you see on TV where like dudes are like hitting the ball from 35, 40 and the Jonah is just flying upper 90. And you're like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
This is real.
It's different when you experience it up in person.
Yeah. I'm like, this is real. So in my defense, though, we were only down 2-3-0 in the first half. Okay. That was the half that I played. So we were good. The moment I got taken out, that's when they ran up the numbers. But whatever. But went there, played, you know, competed a bunch of the pro teams there. Got to see my first European game. It was Örebro versus, I want to say, Helsingborg, I think, if I remember correctly. Örebro SK. And I'll never forget, whole city shut down. Everybody's walking towards the stadium in droves. And like, I just had goosebumps the entire walk. Like it was like a 15-minute walk to the stadium. And I had goosebumps the entire time. You could literally hear people doing the chants, singing, the entire city basically. I was like, yo, we're here. Like this is what I've wanted, like for how long. We got there, we got into the stadium, and they just chanted and sang the entire time. And I was just like, yo, I think I still have video of it, honestly. But I was like, yo, this is it. Like this is what I want, right? So obviously the training levels just went up after that, especially after all of us got to experience that. And it was just like dogfights. Like every training session was like kill or be killed, because everybody was like, yo, I want,
I want a piece of this. Eventually.
So wait, real quick. So
yeah,
again, it's just being exposed to that environment that raised your level of awareness to increase your competition, like how you're going to approach competition.
Yep.
Right. And I mean, now, like, you try to kind of send that message over to the next generation, and it's kind of like you get it, but you don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you instill that into the person you're trying to talk to, or the person that you're training with, or the person that you're playing with? You know, like, that's kind of the competition that you have to see and experience for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is
kind of really understand where it is. Cause I've spoken to a lot of professional players on this podcast, and they all say the same thing. In training, competition is like you would think people hate each other in those training sessions.
Yeah.
And then after, you're just having fun and laughing about everything.
Yeah. It was dog fights though. It was like, it was you, the proper meaning of getting stuck in, like, you learn that in those environments. It's kill or be killed, because you understand if I don't put in a performance, I'm not starting. If I don't start, they might, you know, the scouts might not stay and see me. The coaches might not stay and see me, you know, especially good quality scouts. They'll tell you first 5-10 minutes, they look at who they want to look at, then basically they're out, you know? So it's like, I want to be in that first 5 or 10 minutes. I want to be putting in a performance in that first 5 or 10 minutes. So you're battling with everybody, even the people even the person who's your roommate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they separated us into like 4 different squads of 7v7s. And I'm telling you, every game ended like 0-0. Nobody wanted to give an inch. Nobody wanted to. It was ruthless.
Yeah, those are the best environments to be in, man.
Yeah. But it makes you better. It's one of those things where they say, you know, putting pressure creates diamonds.
Yep.
You know, and you really see what you're made of in that type of environment, whether or not you're going to back down, whether or not you're going to crack under pressure, whether or not you're going to battle through, whether or not you're going to come out on top. You find out a lot about yourself in that environment. You really find out how much, and most importantly, what you're made of. So especially like when I finally got over to England through, you know, a coaching friend of mine, you know, he gave me contact to his agent. I finally got over to England, and even just playing non-league, people don't even understand how competitive non-league is, you know, and that was ridiculously high tempo. I'm talking about, we have 40 people at practice one time, 40. And everybody is trying to impress. You know, like 40 people. I'm like, dude. And then the intensity of the session was high. The quality of the session was high. Everybody's getting touches. So it's not like it's okay, it's 40 people, but you know, no. They got three, four teams of 11. Everybody's playing against each other kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first, you know, you get scored. It's either you score a 2, right? If you score 2, the opposing team is out. Otherwise, if it ends, you know, 0-0, both teams are out. Or whoever team is winning or whatever after 7 minutes or whatever, the other team is out, or 5 minutes. So you would play like 11v11 games, 5 minutes or whatever. And you're trying to be, you know, that team.
Yeah, you're trying to say king of the hill, man.
Yeah, especially because, you know, during that time, I went during the January transfer window, so it was cold as shit. You're like,
people trying to earn their spots and everything.
I'm like, I'm not trying to stand out here and get cold. Like, I'm warm, I'm hot, I'm fresh. I made the first two teams. Let's get this dub, because, you know, it might be 15 minutes before the next, you know, next game. Yeah. You know, so it's wild. You know, and even just even once you finally break down the team, it's still 20 some odd people on the roster. You got more than enough to play two teams, you know, like your reserve team and your first team. So you're battling against those guys too. And sometimes the coach is putting you on the reserves because he's like, I want to give time to this guy, but you're talking to him like, hey, I understand you want to give him time, but give it to put him at left back. Don't put him in my position, you know, or put him over here or put like, mm-hmm. don't cut my game time. And it's like I said, it's the culture. Culture is just, and especially that the Swedish and Finnish culture was very different from the English culture. Like I tell people, like people are like, oh, I'm going to play in the Premier League. I understand why they say if you can't do it on a cold, rainy night at Stoke, like it don't matter, because I've had plenty of cold, rainy nights at Stoke. Bro, that's a totally different animal, yo. That is a totally different climate. You want to see true English ball? Watch the championship, watch League One, watch League Two. It might not look all that great, but you pay attention to some of these lower tier teams like a Brentford versus Brighton, games like that. That is true English ball. And if you can't even play that ball, you're not getting anywhere near those Premier League teams. And there's even a science to that when you're watching a Burnley and they're lobbing the ball forward and you're just like, oh, this looks like MLS. No, 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 no. MLS just kicks the ball forward. They lob the ball forward. There's a difference between a kick and a lob. A lob is a pass. A kick is just like, I'm just kicking it anywhere, right? They're putting it into strategic places, right? And I didn't even understand that until I got there, where I was playing in the middle and the coach is like, as soon as you get the ball, turn and just hit it to the corner flag. And I'm like, but he didn't start running yet. And he's like, hit it to the corner flag. I'm like, bro, like, because you know, especially like playing with, you know, Hispanics and things like that. You're looking, you're waiting for the run, and then you time it. No. They're like, hit it to the corner flag. He's going to make the run. If he doesn't get there, he's in trouble. But if you don't hit it to the corner flag, you're in trouble. I'm like, bro, what are we on right here? Like,
yeah, it's crazy because it's all about timing, because the winger or whoever's mm-hmm. running onto that ball has to be reading your body yep. cues, right? As yep. soon as you're putting your head down, you better be making that run. So that makes sense.
But it was crazy. I had never played like that. The speed of it, the intensity, the physicality. Like, it's, yeah, sure, it's physical here, but it's a totally different.
Yeah, it's different, man.
Just go watch some non-league games and watch the tackles. You'd never see that in U.S. soccer. Never. No, it's be a mom or a dad running out on the field with a shotgun, talk about, you hurt my son. Like, nah, man.
So, Naeem, now, you know, you got Identity Hybrid. You got a nice little environment going on up there, man. I love seeing it from down here. And, you know, I know I've gotten the chance to meet some of the players you've worked with as well. And you have a great group of players, man. How was this born? How did it come about? And what direction do you see the company going in the near future?
Well, honestly, it was a matter of, I needed a job that provided me with flexibility. And I couldn't do that working a 9-to-5, because at any point in time, if I had an opportunity to get up and go, I needed flexibility to be able to get up and go, right? So I couldn't have a long-term job commitment due to that. So I was like, okay, I need to, and then alternatively speaking, at 18, I had, you know, found a mentor. He signed me up for my first personal training course. He had a gym out in Bowie. So he was always taking me to the gym. So I had essentially, you know, to a degree, a job there. You know, he was training me for something. So I was trying to use that expertise. And I was like, well, I saw the climate as well changing and shifting, because at that time, Instagram was just getting popular. YouTube was just getting, you know, super popular in that regard for that type of content. And I saw that the climate was changing to sports specific type training, sports performance type training, before it became super popular. Because if you look at it 10 years ago, if any of you really pay attention 10 years ago, there were not that many personal trainers out. And it wasn't this big, it wasn't this prominent, it wasn't like this advertised, it was nothing like that. There was maybe like three or four people that you went to for training in the entirety of your region or your area, and I was it. It wasn't like two or three per city. It was not like that. But I knew that.
Bro, what you mean?
I knew that the information that I was getting, going back and forth to overseas, going to these combines, et cetera, would benefit, you know, the next generation per se. So I had that presence of mind to think about that. And I decided to, you know, base that, whatever I was learning, I was just going to pass it along to whoever it is that I was training. I obviously knew that I wasn't going to be really working with pro players like that or whatever. You know, I knew that I was more than likely going to be working with kids. So I'm like, okay, this is perfect, right? This is right up my alley. This is right up my lane, et cetera. So that's essentially how we got started in totality. And I didn't get my first client until 6 months. 6 months after, like, you know, making my profile and all that kind of stuff on Coach Up. And it was like 6 months I finally got a hit or bead. You know, somebody was like, hey, I want you to train my kid. And I was like, and that's essentially when it started to come.
Started moving.
It just started, you know, next week it'd be one, or this week it'd be two or three or whatever. Like, there's even some kids that I have now that I've been training since then, you know, since that time where I really, really started. So it was like I said, I just needed flexibility in terms of job, and that's essentially how it was created. I also had a dream, which is how the logo came about. So when people always ask me about the logo, where did you come up with the logo at? I had a dream about it. And in the dream, that was the logo. And so I was like, that's the logo. I think I still have the drawing. It was a really bad drawing of it, but shout out to Farida, who was my graphic designer at the time, for actually putting it in place. Where is Identity Hybrid going now? It's going where I had the vision of it going 10 years ago. You know, it's going to a place to where we're at the point where we have the capacity of being able to help players who are in my position or was in my position of not being afforded too many opportunities. And that's always what the base of Identity Hybrid has been about creating opportunities. You know, more than anything else, it's literally about being able to give back to the next person, because I understood and knew that with my limited opportunities, with my limited resources, that I would not be able to progress so far, you know, within my career. I didn't expect to be playing Champions League ball. If I can, you know, at some point in time within these next couple of years, get at least a Champions League experience once or twice where I just step on the field with a Champions League theme song, blessed. But that wasn't something that I had like fully envisioned for myself. I just wanted to compete, you know, in those settings, in those climates. I didn't expect to be like leading goal scorer or Ballon d'Or winner or anything like that. I just wanted to be able to compete. You know, I just had love for the game, love for the sport. I just wanted to be in that environment and play. So for me, it's about that next generation who's coming up and they're seeing these games. They're seeing Messi do his thing. They're seeing Mbappe and Erling Haaland and Lewandowski break records, Dusan Tadic break records or get close to breaking records. And they have those aspirations, but they also have more opportunity, more resources, more access to things. It's about being able to give back to them. So we're finally in that realm to be able to give those things. There's been a few projects that haven't facilitated themselves, especially due to COVID. You know, not much that you can really do about that, but we're at least in the position to where I can make a call to somebody and say, hey, you know, let's have a conversation. You know, I haven't gotten to the place to where I can just recommend somebody and they get straight into the door yet, which I'm hoping happens in the next year and a half. We're getting close. But, you know, we're at that place to where, again, I can at least call somebody and have a conversation and say, you know, what's going on? You know, what projects you got going on? You know, what do I need to do or what do I need to have in place by XYZ time, you know, to get you something? And, you know, we got some players who are getting their Division I scholarships. Had a player who just signed his first professional contract. I can't announce that yet because I can't announce that yet. but obviously, when you see it, then, or you listen to this and then you have seen it, well, that will be the official time we'll be able to announce it. But yeah, it's moving, it's progressing. It's we're trying to make an impact. That's the most important.
Amazing, man. Amazing. Well, Naeem, we've come to the end of our podcast. Already? And I love always ending with a few questions just to see what your answers are. So
get it.
Ready? You ready for it, man?
I'm ready.
All right. What advice would you give a teenage Naeem?
Oh, a teenage Naeem. your life is going to actually take a little bit more risk. Take some more risk.
Love it. Love it. What are your top three rules that you use in your everyday life?
Don't compromise. Smile regardless. And don't compromise, smile regardless. And find the lesson.
Love it.
Find a lesson behind it.
So far from everything that you've experienced in your life, what is the biggest lesson that you've learned?
Biggest lesson. Life will give you exactly what you ask for, so long as your heart stays clean.
Okay. Where do you see yourself personally in the next 5 years?
Next 5 years, finishing up my playing career, hopefully with a UEFA B or A badge, and starting the process of being at a women's national team. That's a project that I would love to do, to take a women's national team to like the World Cup for the first time, or be in the process of spearheading one of those type of programs. I think that'll be the perfect job for me. I like underdog stories, and I have had an underdog story, so I like to take my chances with that one.
Okay. Last question. Are you happy?
Oh yeah, I want to say a year and a half ago I wasn't, but yeah, right now, absolutely. I don't even want to say happy. I want to say I'm content. I'm content with how things are. I'm positive with how things are going. I'm positive in where things are going. Happy. I'll be happy when certain things are fulfilled. You know, that'll be that extra
smile regardless, though, right?
Yeah. Of course. Of course. I'm content nonetheless. I'm living, I'm breathing. I'm able to be around some great clientele, some great group of kids. I'm blessed to be able to do what I do. I'm blessed to be able to teach what I teach. I'm blessed to be able to have conversations like this with people. Blessed to be able to share, my story, and hopefully that resonates with, some people. So at no point in time, I'll complain off camera, or off the microphone, when I'm by myself, like every aspiring professional athlete does, that gym late at night at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll be sitting there, bumping some heavy music with some explicit lyrics, ready to throw the dumbbell at the mirror. But even those moments I enjoy. So I'm always going to keep a smile on my face. That's
beautiful, man. Well, Naeem, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your story and your experiences. Anybody listening, I know they've gained enormous value from today's podcast. So I appreciate that, my man.
Of course, of course.
Again, guys, thank you for joining in. This is the Winner's Circle by Grande Sports Training, where we dive deep into the mindset of professional or former professional soccer players. Until the next one, take care.
Ciao.